Rolling.
Fratelloni's Hardware and Garden Stores brings you Garage Logic Podcast number 1253, Feb 26, 2024. I don't know if we'll get to the record. It was 64 degrees on this day in 1896. And it was 20... Jesus. It was 21 below in 1897. Play the song.
Hail the flashlight, King.
Hail you!
And now, from the mayor's office above the boathouse on the east shore of Spoon Lake, it's Garage Logic with Chris Reavers manning Technology Corner, Kenny Olson from
it's
the Krabby Coffee
time.
Shop, John Hite in the newsroom, and of course, the rookie. Here is your flashlight king, fireworks commissioner, and the keeper of common sense, your mayor.
It's already been a long
Joe
week, huh?
Sushir.
John and I were talking this morning. This warm weather is unseasonable, but enjoyable from my perspective.
Hell yeah.
And I was just wondering, back in 1921, for example, that's the year a calendar year received its first 60-degree temp in the year. And that was on Feb 15 in 1921. It hit 63.
Ooh.
And that's the first time 60 shows up in Feb in the brief amount of time that we've been keeping records. So, John, what did you find for 1921?
1921, it did not cause any stir in either of the papers. I saw both the Minneapolis Star and the Star Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
In the Star, there was a tiny little boxed bottom left of the front page that just gave the forecast with no temp readings at all. It just said rain or snow possible tonight, but warmer this evening.
Jeez.
No mention of temps at all. And there was a tiny box also on the front page. It said it was a story. The lead was, those who fall to bank furnace fires tonight, believing Minneapolis's mild weather will continue indefinitely, will awake shivering tomorrow. So apparently it was supposed to get
Similar to what's happening today.
Wow.
16.
It's supposed to get very cold tomorrow. All right,
then we
jumped forward. We went to 1981, when on February 16th in 1981, mm-hmm. it was 60 degrees. Any news about that?
The only thing was, and before I do that, on the 1921 run, 25 stories on the front page. 25.
Oh, yeah. They used to lay out the paper slapdashery.
Yeah. On February 16th, 1981, the only thing about the weather, there was a picture on the front page,
mm-hmm.
And it was from the ground, a photo of joggers and a lot of water, and it said, joggers face unseasonable problem, puddles.
Okay.
And that was it. There was nothing else. There was a picture in the metro section of four fishermen standing on Lake Calhoun.
Mm.
And most of what they were standing on was
water.
Puddles. Yeah. And there was ice too. And it said, watch out. And then there was another picture of a cross country ski race that was mostly done on mud and grass in Mora because there was no snow. And other than that, there's no, nothing.
Thank you for that report, mm-hmm. John.
Yes.
I was reading the Wall Street Journal Saturday, and this small story caught my eye. It was on page two.
Teeny one,
page two.
You read thoroughly, don't you?
And I noted Wisconsin, and the headline was Teens Sought in Luxury Car Thefts. It's very short. I can read it. A group of teenagers believed to be from Chicago broke into a luxury car dealership in Wisconsin and drove off with nine vehicles valued at more than $500,000.
Wow.
Sunday's heist at a Jaguar Land Rover dealership in Waukesha was captured on surveillance camera footage showing nine masked suspects filing into the dealership before each drives off in a car. Waukesha is about 19 miles west of Milwaukee. The video also shows one car being backed up and smashed through an overhead service door. Waukesha Police Captain Dan Bauman said the suspects broke into the dealership about 6 a.m. Sunday, found where its car keys were stored, and then activated the key fobs to find the cars they stole. The vehicles are valued at more than $583,000. One suspect, a 17-year-old Chicago boy, was arrested Sunday in the southern Wisconsin community of Pleasant Prairie after the stolen vehicle he was driving along Interstate 94 crashed because these kids don't know how to drive. It was crashed during a police pursuit. He was being held at the Waukesha County Jail on a $50,000 bond. Police said Sunday that the suspects are believed to be an organized crime group of teenagers from the Chicago area. And I thought to myself, what if Jaguar was still located in downtown Minneapolis? It used to be on Hennepin and Washington. Yeah. It was Hansard, and they moved. So what if a Jaguar Land Rover dealership was still in downtown under the purview of the Minneapolis City Council? And let's say three or four times a year it had been robbed of the luxury cars. What do you think the response of the city council would be, having they already have provided evidence to what their response might be? Yes, you in the back.
They would sue Jaguar.
They would go after Jaguar Land Rover for failure to manufacture, because they manufactured keys that actually identified the car.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it way too easy.
Readily available.
When you break into a dealership and then you press a key fob and note, oh, it's the third one down there, it's the red one. That's the fault of Jaguar Land Rover. That's where we are in this country today.
Yep.
Wow.
And it would even be more likely that would be the response, because it's also a city council that would be predisposed, unless it was driven by an equity officer, they would be predisposed to frown upon high-end cars, luxury cars, Jags and Land Rovers. So they would be licking their chops to relieve the criminal aspect of it from the youth. They would go after the manufacturer for making key fobs that just, they identified the car. They shouldn't identify the car.
But you mentioned something, too. The organized ring out of Chicago, what is that distance to Waukesha, as Johnny once called it?
Hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, so it is fairly close. Okay.
It's nothing.
Wow.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
You live in a northern suburb, you can go to a Marquette game in about 55 minutes.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Then I note, too, that I was reminded that you could used to be able to steal a car with maybe a screwdriver and a piece of wire. It was
back in the good old days.
In the good old days, when people were honest,
yeah,
cars were terribly easy to steal.
Yep.
I got a note from Steve Mulholland, who's in the belly of the beast. Sticking their noses in the conflict between Israel and Palestine was the first order of business for the newly assembled Minneapolis City Council. Their encore is to jump on Keith Ellison's coattails and call for a recall of Kia and Hyundai vehicles, which are being efficiently snarfed up by resourceful urban youths. You've already discussed the absurdity of blaming auto manufacturers for crimes committed by misguided young people, and how there was a time when any car could be stolen with a screwdriver and some wire. Yet there was no epidemic of auto thefts, frankly, because it was a simpler time when people actually obeyed laws. Just because you could steal a car didn't mean you had to. There's also been a rash of yard items being stolen in Minneapolis. Should we file a suit against Adirondack? But what this council fails to realize is that even if Kia and Hyundai wave a magic wand rendering all their vehicles, new and used, impossible to steal, the Utes would find something else to take from law-abiding citizens. We're putting a Band-Aid on an infection that will never fix the problem. Keep pushing back, loyal GL or Steve Mulholland in the belly of the beast in the Liberal Lakes area of Minneapolis. Hmm. But he's right. I've told you guys this story before, but it bears repeating. One time there was a sudden ruckus in our front yard at our house when I was a kid.
Okay.
And many, many neighbors had congregated. And it turned out that a 25-horse outboard on the old man's boat had been stolen overnight.
That's a heavy engine.
Right. And no one could believe it.
People
were
monster.
Standing around in the yard and rubbing their chins. And, you know, what do you think happened, Henry? Yeah, right. I don't know. You can tell they got it off here.
That's a two-person job.
Right.
And you'd have to be awful strong and awful quiet.
I guess my I guess my point had nothing to do with the size of the motor or what it weighed.
What about the front yard being the lakeside? Did that have anything to do with the point?
This was in the front yard. Yeah. My point was that people were astonished by a theft.
Yeah.
Astonished.
We knew that. We just opted to change the focus.
Because we've heard the story before.
Because, yeah, we have, you know, a couple, two, three times a week. But you're right. And when you were going on and on and on about the car thefts we currently have, I just can't stop thinking about how easily it's all solved by a $30 steering wheel lock that's visible from the outside when you see it. Hell, it probably doesn't even have to work.
It's solved by something easier than that, which is very difficult to recover. It's solved by people having a sense of obligation to their fellow man.
It almost seems, you're right, it's too late. It seems like we'll never be able to go back.
Yeah. It really does. It's just, well.
In more ways than one.
Well, I mean, how do I count the ways? How do I count the ways?
I'd start with one.
Yeah, I mean, a real good place to start, at the very beginning.
I think that was rhetorical, I think.
Oh, are those the ones you're not supposed to answer?
Yeah. Hmm.
There's an emailer who's found fault with our ruling on the bit of cookie that was taken from a gas station, unless he's having a laugh. Hmm. A bit of cookie was taken from a gas station in the Brainerd area, and the fellow who emailed us wanted a ruling on whether he in fact commit a crime. And well, in fact, he did, apparently, because he has to appear in court because the clerk on duty felt violated that a little piece of crap cookie was taken. And this Joe from Egan writes, please see Exhibit A attached. It is a photo of a quarter-size cookie found over the weekend at my local Target store. Did I pick up and eat it? No, because I know the difference between right and wrong. Hmm. What's next? I decide to pick lilacs down on Main Street from some curmudgeon's front yard. I wait for Rookie to look away, and I swipe the half-eaten pork chop from his plate at Kitchen and Rail. Ooh. We don't steal. And then he sends the exhibit. The cookie, the little hunk of cookie that was bit off, you know. And, here it is.
Yeah.
There it is.
A little turd-like cookie.
May I introduce into evidence photo number one.
Yeah. Right. I think he's having a bit of a laugh with this.
Yeah. Well, I think we were right. But let's just hope the judge throws it out.
I have a viewpoint on our show, R&B, from Vietnam.
Hmm. Oh.
Your analysis and nuanced, thoughtful takes on many issues is why I've been listening since the radio days, and now that I live in Vietnam, I've never missed a podcast. That said, I'm surprised you fail to see the irony in your shallow analysis of Trump, consistently saying that he was stunted at the age of 7 by some event or trauma. Do you see the irony? Your closed-minded, narrow view of this one topic looks like the same stunted Trump derangement syndrome that you accuse Trump of being limited by. To make matters worse, you seem to hold the staff hostage from any attempt at a nuanced debate on the subject. Still love the show, and don't get me wrong, but just hope you can take a step back and see how your biases are holding the show back from being even better. Cheers from Saigon, Charles Mantufel.
May I go first?
Yes.
And I think I speak for the whole gang, the four of us here. I disagree.
With me or Charles Mantufel?
With the fellow from Vietnam.
Disagree in what sense?
It's not the Matthew show. It's not the Chris show. It's not the John show. It's not the Kenny show. It's the Joe show. We get in our jabs, but, you know, it's your show. Do what you want. I do agree that you do have Trump derangement syndrome, though.
I do not have.
Yes, you absolutely do, Joe.
Well, no, I don't.
Yeah, you do. You hate him so much that you're obsessed by it.
Staying out of this one.
I'm going to sit this play out.
Yeah, me too.
But it I think, speaking again for the four of us, we don't care. It's Joe Souchere's Garage Logic. It's your show.
The policies that tend to be put in place with the likes of Trump in office are more appealing to me than any policies put in place under Biden.
All right.
But Trump, to me, is the wrong messenger. He's a despicable human being. Now, if that suggests derangement syndrome, so be it. I don't fly off the handle at every mention of Trump. He doesn't consume my daily thinking. It's just, I just think it's a shame this once great country has come down to these two pathetic creatures for the president of the United States. I just think it's just pathetic.
And Haley losing by, what was it, 40% over the weekend? Is that the right number, 40%?
Well, 40% of Republicans did not vote for Trump.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And so it was interesting reading the pieces about that this morning.
The policies that would be put in place under a Trump, well even that might be in question given some of his comments. But generally speaking, the policies put in place during his presidency were far better than the policies that have been put in place by Biden. Right?
So
I can see that. But so the country deserves a decent human being as president.
Gotcha. That's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
We are here today.
Oh, no.
At this prestigious
insert location
to talk with people. Okay. People in uniform, people in suits, people in t-shirts, people in dresses, and all of these people are here today together, okay? Because we want to be unburdened by the things that have burdened us in the past mm-hmm. and in the present and perhaps even in the future. And as I look around, I see the sun is shining. And I see that there are trees over there and there is ground beneath us. And I have hands and they are clapping. And I am laughing. Thank you. Thank you.
What's her name, Chris?
Elsa Kurt. And a lot of the Kamala ones, and she's fantastic. But some of the Kamala ones she does, we can't use because she likes to throw in a curse word every once in a while.
But the beauty of that is that's the all-encompassing Kamala speech.
That could have been placed
anywhere. That's all you
anywhere.
Need to know. Yep. Insert location.
Right.
And then you got it covered. I'm glad to be here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Then she would say the same nonsense.
Unburdened is unburdened. A big one with her. Unburdened.
I have hands.
I have hands, and they are clapping.
So if Trump... During the last election, remember the lead up the summer before the election, Trump was just off the rails on social media. If he had kept his mouth shut, if he wasn't on social media, would you have cast a vote for him? Would your tune be different about him if he was simply more presidential?
I have to think that would alter my thinking a great deal, but he's the least presidential person I've ever come across.
You are in the majority, and I think my personal feeling is that's why he lost. He's his own worst enemy.
He is his own worst enemy.
If he could have stayed off of Twitter, though, he'd be a different person, which would us probably... Well, his ego, his etc.
Oh, right. You're right. He would have to be a whole different person. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't be as despicable, as Joe likes to call him, as some of us find him.
Yeah.
But he does one poke too many. That's what his problem. He can't leave things alone.
Well, he's not fit. I'm sorry. The policies that were created under the Trump presidency were better than the policies created under the Biden policy. There's no guarantee that the next Trump presidency would result in policies, some of which might be very threatening to us, some of which maybe not. But the first time around, much better than what's happened under this, whoever's running the country now. It's not Biden. It might be Obama. It might be Michelle Obama. It might be
we've heard the term recently of the O'Biden presidency, which
why don't you play Joe? You had some Joe there.
Oh, that might take me a moment. I didn't know
you. Yeah. Well, you're doing that. The other thing, what Joe talks about and everything. Why do you think all the former people that worked for Trump are speaking out against him?
They couldn't wait to get away.
And are saying he's a danger to America, et cetera, et cetera. Is it just because they're jealous? Because they're angry at him for, you know, maybe losing their jobs? That's part of it for me too. And those aren't, I mean, crazy people. Those are actual people who have worked in government all their lives, for better or for worse, et cetera. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
But there's a lot of them. It's not just like it's like two or three guys. There's a lot.
Do you have the context for this Biden remark?
I need a minute because I lost it on my clip because I did not know that you were going to ask for
it. Oh, you lost it, huh? Okay.
Chris, are we allowed to play stuff from Saturday Night Live?
We are not. No,
we are not. All right. Comedian Shane Gillis was on, and we were talking about this before the show. They did one really funny skit where Shane played Trump, and he had the Trump shoes on. And oh my God, it just hit really so funny. Close to home.
That was funny. That was very funny.
My garage door guy is not just the guy. You get the whole family with Precision Garage Door of the Twin Cities in Western Wisconsin. They don't charge more for weekend visits. If you've ever got stung on a weekend, you know how meaningful that can be. And they take care of everything, and they try to take care of it with the one visit. They don't have to give you that song and dance about running back to the shop because they forgot an elbow joint. They got the stuff in the truck. Most often, they have the stuff in the truck, the springs, the rollers, the hardware, the whatever they need. They get the stuff. And then they text you, and they say, hey, we're about 40 minutes out. You can get yourself ready.
Give you an ETA?
You get the coffee and the chair. You bring the newspaper out. And you're ready to watch this whole operation. If you need a door, they'll take care of that. Why don't you put their number in your cell phone contacts? See how modernized I've become? Mm-hmm. Put that in your cell phone contacts under Precision Door. Maybe you just want to have Precision.
Right.
However you do your contacts.
Right.
612-263-6985. If you don't have contacts in your cell phone, find them on the computers. On the interwebs.
Yes, internet.
PrecisionDoorMN.com. That's PrecisionDoorMN.com.
Not a Garage Logic town council member. Here's what you're missing.
Council members, we have the ultimate practical joke to play on your significant other, your buddy, your brother, your friend, whatever. Go to the store, the music store, buy a cheap harmonica, and then get some zip ties and zip tie that harmonica on the undercarriage of the person's vehicle.
Oh, sweet wow. Jesus.
Yeah. You got to make sure the mouthpiece part is facing forward and you get up to speed. And that thing starts singing, and it will drive them crazy.
You should have done this to Joe.
I know. I sent it to him. I was so excited that I sent it to Suits right away, and then I'm going, oh, damn it, I should have sent it to Paul.
Go behind the scenes of Garage Logic with unfiltered audio and video access, invites to exclusive events, an emailed newsletter from the mayor himself, and more by signing up at GarageLogic.com.
The Earth is not your mother. The Joe Soucheray Show.
Closing out February, but you still got time to love your rug with Zero Res. If you want to get your carpets cleaned professionally, then Zero Res is the only company you should go for, especially during the month of love. They got the Love Your Rug special. Zero Res will spread the love to you and your home. They've got over 17,000 Google reviews, a 4.9 rating, and Zero Res has got a great deal for you. You can get 3 rooms, Zero Resified, starting at just $119. They'll throw in a free hallway. Don't forget to get your air ducts clean because there's a bunch of yucky junk up there. This month, take $75 off when you get your air ducts Zero Res clean. But you got to ask for the deal. Ask them about the Rookie Love Your Rug special. Call 952-ZEROREZ or go online to ZeroResMinnesota.com and tell them you want the Rookie Love Your Rug special. And business owners, call today for your commercial cleaning estimate. They can get it ZeroResified. They do a great job with businesses as well. 952-ZEROREZ, spelled forwards or backwards, spelled the same, ZeroRes.
Is it true that Trump just forgot his wife's name and called her Mercedes?
Who hasn't done that?
Right. Yeah.
Lois, well, hang up the phone. Remember that one? Don't you ever call me Lois again.
Mercedes.
What's embarrassing is when you have the name wrong at certain times, if you know what I'm saying.
I think I do.
Yes, timing is everything.
I think I do. Well, here's...
I don't know what you mean.
They're both...
No.
Okay.
They're both struggling a bit, I think, with cognitive issues, but yeah. Here's our president during a governor's conference referring to, I believe, Abraham Lincoln. All right.
And you know, stand here in front of this portrait, the man behind me here. He said, and I want to make sure I get the quote exactly right. He said, the better angel, he said, we must address the council and address the better angels of our nature. And we do well to remember what else he said. He said, we're not enemies, but we're friends. This is in the Civil War. He said, we're not enemies, but we're friends. We must not be enemies. Folks, and I've been around, I know I don't look it, I've been around a long while. And I mean this sincerely. Politics has gotten too bitter.
He's responsible for.
What an undistinguished career he's had for 45 years.
Right. So I love how he says, I don't look it, but I've been around a while. No,
you do.
All right, back to the local front. We've had a rash of robberies over the weekend in Minneapolis. Three juveniles. Robberies, some at gunpoint, some not. Cars, belongings. It was, and I asked John to find the previous rash, which was when, John?
The previous rash was in February on the 12th.
And it was the same modus operandi. It was
correct.
Youths all around the city sticking people up. Is that correct?
That's correct. And yesterday, the chief said it appears to be the same MO, the same spree that we suspected in the previous robbery spree.
Now, have any arrests been made on the weekend's spree?
Yes, they arrested three juveniles last evening after there was another spree last evening.
Then what the public needs to know is, what did Mary, if they are the same as the first spree, then what did Mary do with him on the first spree?
Yeah, and there's no follow-up to that. There is a story in the Strib from February 12th just saying three teenagers on Monday suspected an armed robbery were arrested. But no word on what happened to him after that.
Well, we need to know, was yesterday's arrest of the three the same three? Because if that's the case... The prosecutorial system in Minneapolis does not work. It's literally, there it is again, I'm sorry. It doesn't work. If Mary had a hand in this, which I don't know the answer to that question, it doesn't work. You can't bring in three hoodlums for a crime spree, let them go only to discover that 2 weeks later they're going to do the same thing. So how do we find out if it's the same three?
I think you would be stymied if you're a reporter because they'd say, well, they're juveniles.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get any information for that. So I think you'd have to either charge them as adults, right? And I don't know if you do that in this case. Or just ask somebody and see if you can get some info if they're going to be put in some program.
Help me understand that there has to be what would you call it? A legal roster, correct, of arresting?
Yeah.
But I don't know if being a minor, does that change that?
Yeah, they won't release the name.
I'm terribly comfortable betting that's the same three. Now, Minneapolis is capable of producing more than one group of three
right.
bandits, but I'm betting that's the same three, and I'm betting they didn't suffer any consequences the first time around, and here they are again doing it again.
I was talking to a law enforcement officer over the weekend who monitors the large chain store off 494 in Bloomington.
I don't know. Just say the store.
It's Walmart.
Yeah.
Oh, and this isn't a rip on Walmart, but he one of his roles is he goes there when he's on duty. And he says, yep, we basically arrest the same, 15 people basically every other day. Hmm. And, again, that's, Hennepin County.
Who are they working for, these kids? They're not bringing it home for themselves, are they?
That's what his suspicion was, is the fact that they've got to be getting hired by somebody much larger. And they're specifically going after, they being these organized rings, they're going after juveniles because that way they're easier.
See, I had a little bit of a little different take on it than you, Joe. I assumed it was two or three different groups of kids a few weeks ago and two or three groups over the weekend most recently that are all working for somebody.
Didn't we discover during a rash of Best Buy thefts that it turns out the kids stealing the TVs, they were in fact working for a larger syndicate?
I vaguely remember that, yes.
Here's the problem.
What the problem?
You probably already know the problem, but if you don't, the problem is we have to rely on consequences because we can't rely that the behavior is going to change.
No.
It's just not going to change.
No, and in fact, it's getting worse.
Yeah, and quick turnaround will only make it worse. The consequences, all we can do, all we should be doing is taking them off the street for an extended period of time.
But we are led by morons.
Yeah.
Seriously, they're morons. They want the car company responsible for a theft. They're morons. They're destructive morons.
Yeah. They also, the story I handed you earlier, they want the citizens to maybe have a hand.
Where is that?
I printed it out for you. Did you guys see?
let's find it or print it again because I don't have it in front of me.
I can do it right here. The Minneapolis City Council is going to ask.
I got it.
Hey, do you have it?
I got it.
Right there.
Should Minneapolis voters be allowed to simply vote change in the city's laws? Councilmember Robin Wansley thinks so, and there appears to be enough support on the council to move the idea toward a public hearing in mid-March and a potential ballot question in November. Wansley wants voters to amend the city charter to allow residents to vote directly to enact new city ordinances and repeal existing ones. I'm smelling a rat already.
What could go wrong?
Such a process is often called citizen initiative, ballot initiative, or popular referendum. Currently, voters can force the council to consider an issue via a ballot question, but only the council can actually make law. This is what happened with Minneapolis rent control question in 2021. Voters approved a question saying the council should take the idea on, but the council has yet to pass anything. Well, because that would involve work.
Correct.
To the frustration of supporters like Wansley, it's a power to the people argument, a form of direct democracy currently favored by many on the left end of the political spectrum in major American cities. They might as well have written, Dave Orrick wrote this, he might as well have written, very popular the closer you get to the country's tallest buildings. Ballot initiatives give residents another option when they are faced with bureaucratic stalling tactics, vetoes, and other barriers. Wansley wrote in a newsletter to constituents describing the process as a check and balance on City Hall. Rent control. When Minneapolis voters told the council to deliberate on the issue, St. Paul voters simply made it happen, which has been nothing but trouble. That same night, St. Paul voters enacted a rent control policy by approving a more specific and powerful question on their ballots. That's because St. Paul's charter allows for ballot initiatives and referendums. In fact, so do a number of other Minnesota cities, including Duluth, Bloomington, and Brooklyn Park. Not everyone does. Rochester, for example, operates like Minneapolis. Wansley has not produced specifics yet. Well, because that would involve work. In most referendum communities, a threshold of voter signatures is needed to get a question on the ballot. And sometimes the city council or mayor need to sign off. Is there opposition? There is yet to be full-fledged discussion on the idea, because that would take work. But council member Linnea Palmisano recently expressed reservations, arguing that citizen initiatives actually weaken the council by bypassing it. And that, she said, actually weakens the council's ability to check the power of the mayor. And finally, specific wording for Wansley's proposal will be completed in a few weeks, and the city council is eyeing a mid-March public hearing. The council recently voted to hold a March 4 hearing, but that date appeared likely to be postponed for procedural reasons, meaning they would have to work more.
Got it.
If the council approves the idea, it could be subject to a veto by Fry, who hasn't weighed in. The council could override his veto if it survives. It would go to the Charter Commission, whose support would be needed to place the question to voters in the fall's general election. Well, based on this, we really don't know what this would look like.
So
it's just Wansley shooting off her trap at this point. There's nothing definitive here.
My take is the voters will decide if the council should decide, right?
That's one way to look at it.
But who's going to get that question on the ballot? I want free ice cream in all of Minneapolis. How do I get that question on the ballot so we can decide if the city council should decide for us, right?
I want to be on record. I would vote for that.
I want to take your I want free ice cream and run with that. To me, what this suggests is Wansley is hoping that maybe the citizens would come up with a variety of laws to help push along the mystery. Maybe eliminate all laws for car theft. Maybe eliminate burglaries under $500. Maybe create demands for homeless can live in a building if they can demonstrate that the owners are in Phoenix for 6 months. Maybe she could come up. Maybe she's hoping, as long as the people in Minneapolis who appear to be doing the voting are on the same page as these morons they've elected, she might be looking at a situation where she's hoping to bring about significant change to the cultural landscape by eliminating lawbreaking for many of the things that are now lawbreaking. That would be my cynical take on what she's up to.
It seems like a long-term con game where the city council is making the citizens of Minneapolis feel and think like the city council is working for them, right?
Yeah.
The citizens of Minneapolis are just playing right into their hands, right?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, that's my takeaway.
My takeaway is this is a bad idea because it came from Robin Wansley. It would have been a bad idea no matter who it came from.
Right. And Palmisano,
Lisa. Linnea? Linnea Palmisano.
She's opposed.
Well, she has reservations, arguing that citizen initiatives actually weaken the council by bypassing it. And that, she said, actually weakens the council's ability to check the power of the mayor.
I didn't get that takeaway because I took away the fact that the citizens would decide what the council should pass or not pass. Yeah. So the citizens are going to say, we want you guys to talk about free snow shoveling sidewalks. We want you to talk about that.
Well,
right?
And again, the reason we're struggling is this story's premature.
Yeah.
There's no definitive characteristics of the Robin Wansley plan, but she probably had a couple of minutes there where she wasn't really swamped with work and
light day
came up with this BS. So who knows what they're doing, right?
Yes.
Would you like to go to Mr. Height?
I would like to tell the fine GLers about my friends at Hofferman Water. You know, Joe was asking me about my son's basketball tournament before the show started.
No, I wasn't.
And I told him that all of the kids filled up their water bottles with the best drinking water possible.
All right.
Connecticut and Hofferman, listen, GLers, get on the schedule. Have them come out for that free water analysis today. 612-895-2440. You could also visit their website, which is, of course, HoffermanWater.com. It's made an amazing difference in the quality of the water inside my home, and I know it will do the same for you. You get that new system, your showers are better. So was your laundry, your drinking water, your coffee in the morning. Yeah, it's all there for you. HoffermanWater.com. Get on the schedule. Have them come out for that free water analysis. Like I said, they have been proudly serving the state of Minnesota for over 50 years. Please do me a favor. When you call them and book that appointment, mention you heard about it here on the Garage Logic Podcast.
Who's doing something?
Kenny Pitch Olsen. Pins and clevis hooks. And
he's a man who spends hours in hardware stores.
Hog chains.
Through the nuts and bolts of life.
Nuts.
Joe Souchere.
The number one reoccurring theme we've received over the years from GLers about Seafoam motor treatment, without question, is how it saved them time and money by keeping their ailing cylinders out of the shop. And a lot of these people chime in and say the mechanics just instruct the owner to throw some Seafoam through it, run some Seafoam through it before I even crack the hood on this thing. Just because these guys know how to rebuild a carb or an injection system doesn't mean they necessarily want to. I've often thought, now tell me, I think this is a brilliant idea. One of the codes that you get on your dash, you know, you get the low fuel, ding, 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 or the irritating message about a tire being 5 pounds lower, a door jar. Why not a Seafoam dash light? It saves so many people time and money, and you just stop off at the convenience store, grab a Seafoam, can of Seafoam, throw it in. Next thing you know, the dash light's off, everybody's happy, you're going down the road. It's a miracle elixir for our cylinders, and thankfully, it's readily available all over the globe. Look for it in an automotive chemical aisle near you. A wonderful product in a world of bad gas, Seafoam.
Here is Mr. John Height.
Thank you, Joe. This news brought to you by North American Banking Company. Here's the full story on those robberies we were talking about. Minneapolis police did arrest three juveniles last night in a string of robberies that occurred during separate crime sprees on opposite sides of the city. Yesterday afternoon, Police Chief Brian O'Hara said that four robberies took place in the morning in 18 minutes on the city's 5th precinct. Precinct stopped responding to calls for service for 45 minutes in order to triage limited resources toward the robbery reports. A half hour later, police responded to another carjacking followed by an armed robbery across the river in Northeast. O'Hara said the suspects, young and mostly targeted female victims, in some cases at gunpoint. Nobody luckily injured in those robberies. The crimes may be connected to a string of similar robberies that occurred in Minneapolis earlier this month. So far this year, 237 robberies have been reported in Minneapolis, on pace to match the average from the past 3 years, but up 34% from the same time in 2023, marking a setback for downward progress in violent crime seen last year. Earlier this month, O'Hara issued a department-wide memo to reallocate resources during a robbery spree. The protocol directs patrol officers across the city who are not on a high-priority call or actively engaged in another emergency to respond to the area of the robbery spree. O'Hara said the police response Sunday did have the intended effect of stopping the sprees. Yet that time it asked the public to be on the lookout for groups of young people circling a block in stolen cars looking for potential victims. Police say they're still investigating. They'll release more information as it becomes available. Members of the St. Paul Federation of Educators are making plans to go on strike next month. In a release sent out this morning by the union, representatives say they will file their intent to strike notice sometime during the afternoon hours, and add that if necessary, a strike would begin on Monday, March 11th. Filing comes after more than 92% of SPFE members voted to authorize the strike. Another full-day mediation session is scheduled for March 1st. The last time union members went on strike in St. Paul was in 2020, but they have taken several strike votes during that time since then, during each of the past four bargaining cycles. It may have been road rage that was behind a shooting that injured a motorist Saturday night in Blaine. The victim was exiting Highway 610, turning onto University Avenue about 7 in the evening when Captain Mark Borboom says he was shot. The victim told police an occupant in a black Toyota Camry behind him fired multiple shots at his vehicle. One bullet hit the victim in the abdomen. He was taken to Mercy Hospital with a minor injury. Officers responding to the scene found the victim's vehicle with multiple bullet holes and multiple casings were found in the area. The shooting was possibly the result of road rage, but that all remains under investigation, according to police. Nobody has been arrested in that case yet. University of Minnesota's Board of Regents will pick a new president today. The three finalists were introduced to the public last week. Each of them will be interviewed one final time before a final decision will be made later on this afternoon. Last month, the U of M announced the search for its next president was down to three candidates. They are James Holloway, the provost and executive vice president for academic affairs at the University of New Mexico, Laura Bloomberg, current president of Cleveland State University, and Rebecca Cunningham, the vice president for research and innovation at the University of Michigan. Interviews being held this morning into the early afternoon, and then the U is expected to speak more about it, have a meeting, and pick the new president late in the afternoon.
Did anyone read about any of these three?
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't.
I have, and I can find no evidence that it will make any difference whatsoever. They're just three people from the industry of the failed academy.
Did you notice all three of them had one thing in common?
What's that?
The old phony doctor, you know.
Well, they got the doctor. You know. But I read nothing that would suggest they realize that it's a failed academy. And that disheartens me. And so it really doesn't make any difference which one they pick. No, they're all the same.
It's become an extension of politics.
Right, it's all the
at
same.
At that level especially.
Chancellor Scott Olson says, meanwhile, that college enrollment is up across the Minnesota State Colleges and University system for the first time in over a decade. The Minnesota State system consists of 33 public, community, and technical college and state universities around the state. Enrollment has been declining at colleges nationwide for years, but Olson credits recent state investment in higher education for reversing the trend here. In a 2023 bill, the Minnesota legislature allocated over $4 billion dollars to higher education, then established two tuition and fee-free pathways for Minnesota residents.
John, I'm assuming you don't have this, but I'm curious, because mm-hmm. you included trade schools and technical schools in that number as well, correct? I wonder what the breakdown would be. In other words, is the four-year programs, are they still declining while the trade schools are going up? Because that would be my assumption, wouldn't it be?
I wonder. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you'd think the trades were going up.
All right.
That was great.
Plumber. You want to save that segment maybe for a promo? Just
you talk about the decline of the failed academy almost every day.
Just take a deep breath, Chris.
Anyway.
GOP presidential candidate Nikki Haley set to hold a rally in Bloomington tonight. Haley has made it clear she intends to remain in the race despite a 20-point loss to former President Trump in her home state in South Carolina over the weekend. Haley's rally happens at the Doubletree Hotel in Bloomington, 6:30 tonight. Doors will open at 5.
We're
going to
serve sandwiches and have a little coffee.
Yeah. They have Gene Autry suite of the Hopalong Cassidy Hotel.
They have new carpet in the lobby.
Why don't we take a short break here and see what our friend, the rookie, can tell us.
Well, I can tell you some upbeat news because Minnesota Masonic Charities, I've told you about their scholarship program, as one of the largest private scholarship granting organizations in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota Masonic Charities is proud to support the young people of Minnesota. How do they do that? Well, last year they launched a brand new scholarship program. It's unlike anything you've ever seen. They call it the Selfless Scholar. The way the scholarship program works is instead of inviting students to apply for a scholarship based on their achievements, the scholarship encourages young people to look beyond themselves and recognize the kindness and selflessness of their fellow students. Very, very unique. And after receiving hundreds of wonderful stories, MMC has going to be picking their 2024 group out. The 29th is the deadline. So I'll share some of those stories with you soon. But one other good thing about the scholarship, the $15,000, $5,000 scholarships are split between the nominator and the nominee, thereby awarding both the person who took the time to write the story and the person whose story got the attention of a peer. You will hear more. I will tell you to go to their website, mnmasoniccharities.org. That's mnmasoniccharities.org.
Joe is not amused.
Nope. Ever.
I said, sometime, you don't have to send the receipt for this one, okay?
You cannot stop him. He'll just make a move. Joe Soucheray.
Thank you to all of you GLers who have made your donation to the Frontline Foundation throughout the course of our campaign. Here we're going to go another couple of days to help support the tragic incident down in Burnsville, Minnesota. The Frontline Foundation began as an attempt to help and support our fallen heroes, including law enforcement officers, firefighters, EMS, and the Minnesota National Guard. They provide support to those who died while in the line of duty by giving benefit payments to dependents of fallen first responders, in addition to providing endowments and support for the families of fallen heroes. The Frontline Foundation will underwrite scholarships and training registration costs for frontline personnel, as well as support preparedness training for safety officers in hospitals, schools, and places of worship. To donate, just like Joe did last week, courtesy of Rook, go online, garagelogic.com. You'll see the banner ad right there. And once again, thank you to everybody that's already made your donation. We appreciate it.
I think GLers have really stepped up.
They really did. Yeah. They really, really
I'm
did.
I'm so surprised.
I'm not. They're GLers.
We set a goal of 5,000, and it's over 10 right now. That's so awesome.
Congratulations, GLers.
And thank you.
Hell yeah.
In other news, Republican National Committee Chair Rhoda McDaniel will resign from her post on March 8th, she said early today, as former President Trump looks to shuffle the organization's leadership as he closes in on the party's presidential nomination. That decision not unexpected. She had reportedly planned to step down after the South Carolina primary on Saturday, and Trump has already endorsed his preferred replacement, RNC General Counsel Michael Whatley. RNC co-chair Drew McKissick said in a statement today that he would also resign from his role in March. Trump has endorsed his daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, to serve as the next co-chair of the organization. An active duty member of the U.S. Air Force has died this morning after he set himself ablaze yesterday outside the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., declaring that, quote, he will no longer be complicit in genocide. The 25-year-old airman Aaron Bushnell of San Antonio, Texas, died from his injuries this morning. He had walked up to the embassy shortly before 1 in the afternoon Sunday, began live streaming on the video streaming platform Twitch. Law enforcement officials think the man started a live stream, set his phone down, doused himself in accelerant, and ignited the flames. In a statement this morning, the Air Force said the individual involved in yesterday's incident succumbed to his injuries and passed away last night. The Air Force said it would provide additional information a day after military officials complete notifying his next of kin. President Volodymyr Zelensky said yesterday 31,000 Ukrainian soldiers had been killed since Russia's full-scale invasion 2 years ago. That's the first time official numbers have been released in more than a year by that country. Zelensky told a news conference he could not disclose the number of wounded because it would help Russian military planning. The president of Russia, Vladimir Putin, had said 300,000 Ukrainian troops had been killed in the war, and Zelensky says that is not true. New York Times report in August cited U.S. officials as putting the Ukrainian death toll at close to 70,000. The same report said that as many as 120,000 Russian troops had died during the war.
This is 2 years now. Is this just going to go on forever?
Not going anywhere.
Did you guys see his video clip in an interview with MSNBC?
I did not.
Was he guilt-tripping the United States into sending him more money?
I don't know, but his body language was really awkward. I mean, he looked disturbed.
I can't help you. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay.
No. I'm broke. I can't write any more checks. Sorry.
The body of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny has been handed over to his mother, a top aide to Navalny said Saturday on his social media account. Ivan Zadnov, the director of Navalny's anti-corruption foundation, made the announcement on his Telegram account, thanked everyone who had called on Russian authorities to return Navalny's body to his mom. Earlier on Saturday, his widow accused President Vladimir Putin of mocking Christianity by trying to force his mother to agree to a secret funeral after his death in the Arctic penal colony. Earlier on Saturday, Navalny's widow said in a video Navalny's mother was being literally tortured by authorities who had threatened to bury Navalny in the Arctic prison. Authorities have detained scores of people as they seek to suppress any major outpouring of sympathy for Putin's fiercest foe before the presidential election that he is certain to win. Meanwhile, associates of Navalny said today that talks had been underway right before his death to exchange him for a Russian imprisoned in Germany. Alexei Navalny could have been sitting here now today, not a figure of speech, according to Maria Pevchka, who lives outside Russia. She said she received confirmation the talks were in what she called the final stages February 15th, the day before Navalny was reported dead. Her claims could not be independently confirmed. She did not offer any evidence to back them up.
I went to a funeral of a guy's mom, and she died at 100.
Wow.
And so was I wrong when I said congratulations?
No.
Meaning,
full life.
When you die at 100, that's, you should be congratulated.
How was that comment meant?
Very well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything over 85, it's house money.
It is.
Yeah.
Wait, 85 is your number?
Yeah.
Okay.
30 was mine. So I'm playing with
you made it. You
house
made
money.
It.
Is that how they say it?
Yeah.
The U.S. Supreme Court is hearing arguments in a pair of cases that could fundamentally change discourse on the internet by defining for the first time what rights social media companies have to limit what their users post. The court's decision, expected by June, will almost certainly be its most important statement on the scope of the First Amendment in the internet era, and it'll have major political and economic implications. A ruling that tech platforms like Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok and X have no editorial discretion to decide what posts to allow would expose users to a greater variety of viewpoints, but tech experts say it would almost certainly amplify the ugliest aspects of the digital age, including hate speech and disinformation.
I have a question regarding that topic that I need help understanding.
Yes, sir.
These are privately held companies, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't they have that ability? I don't think they should, but I'm saying, don't they have then that ability since they're privately held?
Well, you got your FCC rules, you know.
But that doesn't apply to social media.
Not at all.
Oh. Well, then I don't know, Chris. You brought up something again that just is a train stop.
Okay, I'm just
a car crash with the tires.
It's not a car crash. It was relating to a topic on the show.
Yeah, but none of us know the answer.
I think Chris asked an important question, though.
Thank you, John.
And I think it's something. I think it's something we should actually be discussing,
because I think it's a huge deal.
The Twitter files, what we learned since Elon purchased Twitter, is just shocking and appalling. And a lot of people say it's still going on, even though Elon is trying to stop it. There's people within the walls of Twitter that are still doing their best to be subversive.
And why it's important, Joe, and why we could probably spend a week's worth of shows on it is, I don't know if you know this, but in a couple of months, there happens to be an election. And unfortunately, social media plays a role
I didn't know that.
So you think they should be able to post whatever they want or not?
I'm asking the question. I don't know, because of the fact that it's a privately held company, they obviously can do what they want, correct? That's
It's a fun topic. I mean, it's free speech, but like Chris said, it's a private company. So what do you do? I think it's a fascinating topic. I don't know the answer.
You must have a theory on what you would like to have.
Well, I love free speech, but then you see some of the stuff and you're like, oh boy, this is free speech. You know what I mean?
But here's the deal. Here's the two sides of the coin.
Yeah,
what you said about Twitter, I think that's what it is now. It's a hellhole, and you thought it was before. So
I think
there's the two sides of the issue.
I agree, but I think it was before, and it's still is. Is that what you just said? Yeah. Yeah.
Huh?
I don't know.
I don't have any idea. I don't know. All right, anyway, that we'll find out in June, by the way, what the Supreme Court. And when that happens, I'm going to devote an entire newscast just to that.
It's all surreal Jedi mind control with the algorithms and everything else. It's weird. Joe, yeah. We live in a weird time.
Yeah.
What?
I saw a guy on Twitter. His wife's back was to him in the kitchen. And he comes by and he sticks his finger in this pot of water and licks it. And then you can see him add a little salt. And she turns around with a wash rag in her hand. And she'd been using that water to clean the sink and whatever.
Algorithms got you.
You know what?
Yeah.
Why would they send that to me, I wonder?
The best part of Facebook, Joe?
Yeah.
Kitty videos. I love cat videos. I would watch them for hours and hours.
Well, maybe you can go to the next cat film festival.
I would be honored because I am the traffic kitty on my talk.
Oh, that's great.
Wow. Boy, that story went badly.
No idea
quickly.
What that means.
Yeah.
John, do you know that the Minnesota... John? Yeah. Did you know that the Minnesota DFL party will allow people without the right to vote to participate in precinct caucuses?
No, but if you hum a few bars, I'll fake it. Thank you.
Reavers.
I'm stunned, Joe.
No, I am too. Did you give me this story?
Mm-hmm.
And when did you find it?
This morning.
It's dated January 26, 2022.
Right out of the hopper. Fresh out of the hopper.
This one's hot.
I'm glad I caught myself right off at the top. I only
Coming
read one sentence.
Yeah. I wonder if it was updated.
I wonder what the hell you're doing. When you
He's trying. It's just a swing and a miss, Joe.
Go ahead, John. All right. In Kentucky. Georgetown police found what is believed to be a large quantity of marijuana at a local liquor store after executing a search warrant, according to Assistant Police Chief Josh Nash. Josh said, we received a drug complaint and we were able to find multiple pounds of marijuana, or what we believed to be marijuana, that they were openly selling in the liquor store. No arrests have been made. The investigation is ongoing. Maybe a hint of what was going on there, the name of the liquor store. 420 Liquors.
420 Liquors.
Lit.
420 Liquors.
Yep, lit.
Boy, I smell a lot of weed. The warmer it gets outside, the more you can smell weed in your car.
Yeah.
Your windows are down.
You just go by random, and all of a sudden, boom.
I smell weed.
He got weed.
You know what I noticed lately on my walks?
Yeah.
I walk by certain areas. As sure as hell, somebody must be sitting on their deck just smoking.
Well, you walk down River Boulevard, you got weed.
Yeah. It's like manure in the country, right? Yeah. All you smell in the spring is manure.
Or manure. I don't know what manure is, but I have smelled manure. Yeah.
The part I don't get is the traveler that travels in at 8:30 a.m. and is completely baked already.
Well, you got a pregame for work. You know how much their lives suck?
Oh,
you blame
God.
Them? Come on.
Oh, my God.
I have to side with Kenny. If I had to spend all day at the airport dealing with jackasses, yeah,
I would be, Brooke, I would be so high. Oh, my God. I'd be Snoop high.
Well, John, but I did, that should do it.
I just All did right, read a John. Story about how officials, Department of Transportation, police, troopers, etc., are saying that more and more crashes now are being attributed to people driving high. Mm-hmm. So,
I followed a guy down River Boulevard. He was going about 12, and the smoke would just pour out of that car. I was in no hurry. I rather enjoyed the contact.
You like the secondary buzz? Yeah. You know,
guy does what he can.
I had some tunes on. I thought, this is not bad.
Pink Floyd, another brick in the wall.
Why'd you stop me, officer? Well, was it speeding? No, you were going 12.
What's your name? Frida. Frida what? Frida to go. All right, thank you.
Yep.
Free to go.
Frida to go.
Are we free to go now?
I am. Yeah. Okay.
It's the new year, and everyone is talking about their resolutions. Resolutions are based on topics for which we have become complacent. The Canopy Group has a New Year's resolution for you. Last year, over 2,700 Minnesotans conquered their complacency and contacted the Canopy Group for their home and auto insurance needs. That is an easy call because 80% of those people had only one agent with one company. No options. The Canopy Group offered them 40 professionals with 16 companies. Many options. The Canopy Group's New Year resolution has always been to annually examine every existing Canopy client. Each and every day, the Canopy Group team is reaching out to their client base and moving many clients from one of their 16 companies to a different company that they also represent. This is a great call for the Canopy Group to make because it is their ongoing promise to always provide their clients with the best coverage at the best price and forever doing away with insurance complacency. Call 800-967-3389 or visit thecanopygroup.com.
You'll learn more here by accident than elsewhere by design. Here's Joe Souchere.
A professor of Pan-American Studies. Because the Field Academy will employ just about anybody if they toe the line, at Cal State University, Los Angeles, has proclaimed that the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl win was an example of white supremacy and that being a Taylor Swift fan is slightly racist.
Huh.
Okay. Just slightly. Yeah.
Cal State?
Yeah, Cal State. Professor Malina Abdullah, whose real name is Malina Rachel Ryman, has gone viral in which she turned the Chiefs Super Bowl win into a racist conspiracy theory. According to the New York Post. After the game ended in Vegas, the professor jumped to her ex account to exclaim, "Why do I feel this was some right-wing white supremacist conspiracy?" Well, because you're an idiot.
Whoops. Excuse me.
Black Lives Matter organizer, pan-Africanist, hip-hop scholar, daughter of God, womanist, truth-teller, mama.
What?
That's who she is.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, actually, she was born in Oakland, nowhere near Africa. Her father, John Ryman, is a Trotsky-esque communist and a union thug. Even her grandfather was a member of the Communist Party in Germany. And yes, that means her father is white. Nonetheless, Abdullah is sure that everything is racist. In fact, she admitted to just that point, replying on X, saying, "Folks think they're attacking me by asking why everything is racist. I'm not offended. Virtually everything is racist." She fits into the mystery really well.
Yeah.
She was also in on the Jesse Smollett lie, too. She thought he was, in our commitment to abolition, we can never believe police, especially the Chicago police, over Jesse Smollett, a black man who has been courageously present, visible, and vocal in the struggle for black freedom. No, he arranged his own fake hanging, irredeemable fool.
There were a lot of people on the Democratic side that were on his side. Could it simply be she's a 49ers fan and has no explanation for the horrible game they played that day?
That's a good point. She's from the Oakland area. Oh. In other comments,
she is a Niners fan. I'm looking at her Twitter account. She is definitely a Niners fan.
So there you go.
In other comments, Abdullah portrayed all police officers as slave catchers and told black Americans that you literally have a target on your back placed there by murderous, racist cops. Finally, Malina Rachel Ryman is also accusing conservative media outlets of perpetuating violence against her for daring to report her outrageous and hateful comments. "Here's the thing," she wrote, "when fake-ass journalists from right-wing outlets turn tweets into news, they spur actual violent responses from their white delusionist followers." Well, you know, I'm going to agree with her on something. Who was it that decided to give this newsworthiness? It was Breitbart. Otherwise, I wouldn't have seen it. A Warner Todd Houston with Breitbart. Professor says Chiefs Super Bowl win is white supremacy, and it's slightly racist. Maybe they're giving it publicity because it's yet another example of a failed academy professor.
Yeah, she's not as special as she thinks she is. The media would do the same thing if she were white or any other nationality.
She is white.
Oh, I thought you said she was black. No, and she came from Africa.
No, she calls herself black, but she's from Oakland.
Oh, she
identifies.
I see. Okay, now that makes sense.
Wait, we can do that?
I didn't know that was possible.
All you have to do is think it up.
Oh, she calls California.
Calls herself a Black Lives Matter organizer, pan-Africanist, hip-hop scholar, daughter of God, womanist, truth-teller, and mama.
And I call her a cracker.
I call her a cracker.
She is half black. She's half black, half white.
She's got a half. Okay.
Are you looking at a picture of her?
Yep, I am.
Is she a looker?
Well, that doesn't matter, does it? So now she's okay. Suits. So now you're saying she's okay.
I think she's fine.
Are we recording before I answer that?
I'll go off the council and answer.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? And I had something else I better get. Oh, Downing had a wonderful point. And, you know, I like to give time to the great thinkers of GL.
Yeah, I know you do. That's nice.
He sells pumpkins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not at this time of year.
No, they have to grow. They're not grown up yet. He ain't seen them out of the earth.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to share some deep thoughts on why all this mail-in and early voting is a bad idea. One, it doesn't give voting the respect it deserves. It treats voting like a nuisance, a chore, a burden from which the government must provide relief, rather than as a right and an obligation we hold so important that we shall schedule our life around it. Two, it mocks the very idea of an informed, deliberative electorate. It shows how people have already made up their minds before the campaigns play out, and that they aren't open to any possibility of new information or further thought changing their vote. We should be like Bud Grant and not commit to a decision until it has to be made. Third, and most important, voting in a lengthy early voting period and by mail contributes to the social and political divide that sickens this country. People vote in solitude, in a vacuum, or if not, then in an echo chamber as part of harvesting votes with like-minded voters. But the thing is, they cast their votes against the other, all without ever coming into contact with those they vilify for voting differently. Hmm. Think about what you see when you go to the polls in person. You walk in and you pass people walking out. You don't know how they voted, but you nod and hold the door. You may know some of them. They are your neighbors, your fellow Americans. Inside, you wait in line. You look about the room. You see others waiting, all ages, different sorts of dress. Some you may know or merely recognize because you've seen them walking their dogs or shopping at the store. They are your neighbors, your fellow Americans, all waiting peacefully for their turn to vote. You know, however, that many of these people, your neighbors, your fellow Americans, are voting differently from you. But what you don't see... You don't see anyone with horns. You don't see any literal Nazis. You don't see deplorables, communists, or people who hate America. No, you see your neighbors, your fellow Americans. And you think that maybe we aren't so different, and maybe we can get along. Remote voting is a lot like social media. It's easy to hate the other when you are hiding behind a screen or a mailbox. But it's harder to hate your neighbors, your fellow Americans, face to face. I think he should submit this someplace. I think he should submit that to some magazine or so. I think that's a hell of a piece.
Very well done.
And it's true, which is why I vote in person.
I do too.
And Willard Anger writes, on the Feb 22 podcast, you briefly brought up the hardware store situation in Frisco, where one must have store personnel walk you through your shopping. A few missives ago, I noted that we would be reduced to making appointments for all our retail experiences. I was only being a little facetious, and I hadn't considered hardware stores. I guess that's where we're headed. Everything will be like making an appointment for a haircut. Ring, ring, hello, Fratellonis, how can I help? I need a torque wrench and some seafoam. When can I come in? Monday at 10:15, okay? If you want a weekend appointment, we're 2 weeks out. And so on. And due to the inefficiencies, prices will rise through no fault of the manufacturer or retailer, who nonetheless will be blamed. Hmm. Now, I would say that's hyperbole, but everything's on the table today. Everything. Nothing works as it should. And it wouldn't surprise me a bit if you have to start making an appointment to go to the store. Would not surprise me a bit.
I don't want that, America.
Well,
let's fight it. Let's fight it.
What do you think we're doing?
We're fighting.
What do you think we're doing?
We are fighting. Let's go.
Isn't it terrible?
I mean, why all this anger? What? Angst?
A Venezuelan immigrant who illegally crossed the border into Texas in 2022 is charged in the murder of a Georgia nursing student.
Not according to the AP.
The Biden administration released the Venezuelan national in El Paso, where he listed an NGO in New York City as his final destination. What's an NGO?
Trying to think.
A source within U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Removal Operations told Breitbart, Texas, that its officers in the Atlanta field once arrested 26-year-old Jose San Antonio Ibarra, where he is now charged with the alleged murder of University of Georgia Athens nursing student, 22-year-old Lakin Hope Riley. I can't foghorn a dead kid. The source, not authorized to speak with the media, said Ibarra entered the U.S. in September of 2022 and was subsequently released due to overcrowding in migrant shelters.
NGO stands for Non-Governmental Organization, a voluntary group that provides services or advocates a public policy.
I knew that that meant non-government organization, but that didn't make sense in this context, but maybe it does. He listed an NGO in New York City as his destination.
Oh, okay.
So maybe there's some non-governmental organization in New York where he was headed for a cot and a couple of hot meals. I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's a shame, though. But the story's been written from the standpoint of how female joggers have to be careful of their surroundings.
Yeah, the AP...
You have to be careful of illegal immigrants, too.
The AP had a very misleading headline, and it caused a bit of an outrage on social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well...
Could I make one... When we were talking about the professor, and the pictures that she has on her media account, it's kind of like, you know, the poster of us that was taken... I don't know, 20 years ago, and everybody says, you guys don't look like that.
Right in the hallway.
Well, yeah. I think the picture she has on social media, same deal. They're about 20 years old. She looks a little different now.
You got her. She's advertising a better self.
A previous self. We all do that.
A previous self.
Yeah,
sure.
Kenny looks especially fetching on our poster.
Is that when he's got that big head of raccoon hair? Like a...
About 100 pounds lighter, at least.
Only Because They Come to Us does Renewal by Anderson wish to say, join us. We too enjoy Only Because They Come to Us. I'm talking
what?
About.
I'm just
not.
I think I want to hear that in replay. Can you replay that?
I can once we're done recording the show.
Because that made no sense.
No sense.
Renewal by Anderson brings you Only Because They. Only
strike two.
Jeez.
Hold on.
I'm gonna follow.
Yeah, they're going to be okay.
Just go for a base hit. Yeah. Just try to get on the base.
I'm trying to hit it out of the park, Kenny.
No, yeah. Kenny, it's worse than that. It's when I say to my kid, just lean into one. Okay, just let the pitcher drill you. Just try to get to first base here.
Let's try it this way. If you need windows, forget this day in history. They sponsor Only Because.
For now.
But it's Renewal by Anderson. The Anderson Acclaim replacement windows are top drawer.
You're
updating your home in ways that improve your everyday life. You know, they engineer and innovate these things right here, made in Minnesota.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. And they're beautiful. They're durable, and they perform well. They're custom built And I don't want to get into the math, but they got it tight there.
It's 1/16 of an inch.
1/16 of an inch of your opening for a weather-tight fit to prevent drafting. And it's not just windows. It's you guys know Renewal by Anderson. They're the best. You need windows, but they also do patio doors and entry doors. Renewal by Anderson has the best products and the best service. You can learn more at renewalbyanderson.com/garagelogic. Then we'd get a little recognition, see, and they'd think, man, I'm glad we advertised with them. Or you can call Renewal by Anderson at 651-705-6931 and tell them you're thankful that they bring you only because they come to us all the way from Lake Las Vegas, Nevada. From the traveling Lyman's. It was on this day.
Methinks day today is the day of February 26th.
In 1853, on this day, Edward D. Neal obtained a charter for the Baldwin School, which later became St. Paul's McAllister College. On this day,
226.
In 1857, territorial delegate Henry M. Rice succeeded in lobbying Congress to pass the Enabling Act for the state of Minnesota. This act defined the state's boundaries and authorized the establishment of a state government. On this day,
February 26th,
in 1857, Mount Zion Hebrew Congregation, the first Jewish organization in Minnesota, was formed in St. Paul.
Yes.
Yes. Of course.
On this day.
Yes. What is this date?
On this day.
226.
In 1883, Hubbard County was organized and named for Lucius F. Hubbard, who served as governor from 1882 to 1886.
I asked this question. Was he a believer?
Yes.
Okay.
And finally, on this day, in 1985, Prince swept the Grammy Awards as his soundtrack to Purple Rain earned rewards for Best Soundtrack, Best Rock Performance, and Best R&B Song.
Wow. That was a pretty good disc, huh?
I saw a video of a very young Prince with his band being interviewed by Dick Clark.
Oh, yeah, that's making the rounds. Yep.
And Prince could not have been more of a pathetic ass talking to Dick Clark.
Well, there's a good chance he was a bit nervous.
No, he was being a jerk.
Dick Clark is the head chief cracker of the entire world. So, yeah, I can see it.
I saw over the weekend a great clip of him.
I guess we'll go with Kenny's then. I was
of
wrong.
Him covering a whole lot of love in concert.
Oh, I bet that's cool.
It was excellent. He plays a great guitar solo, and then it breaks down into a little funk thing. It's cool as hell.
Well, how do I see this?
Well, just go to YouTube.
Is it on his tubes?
It's called Google.
Biscuit Whiskers. Just Google Biscuit Whiskers and you'll find
it. I always watch the play that funky music one, too. That's makes cool, the rounds.
Is that where he's wearing the white fur boots?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of good.
That's at Englewood.
I'm not saying Prince wasn't a great musician. I'm saying on that occasion he acted like a complete fool. You know, Dick Clark would say, how many takes did this record take? And he would... He didn't say anything. He would just hold up four fingers.
He called Sid Mr. Hartman.
Yes, he did.
What else do you need from
that? That was years after this Dick Clark thing. I'm sure Prince matured a bit as he aged.
That's one of my favorite stories, though.
Hello, Mr. Hartman.
Yeah.
Miami.
That's right.
That's where the game was.
2013 was that?
No, it was 2007. Wasn't it? 2007?
Maybe it's 2007.
Is Royce still in FLA?
He is. He has checked in. What time are you calling?
I think he comes home either tonight or tomorrow.
Treated to another edition of Monday Night Sports Talk, Fort Myers edition. But hey, if you can't get enough of Garage Logic, then join the thousands of GLers who have found us on YouTube. All you got to do is search for Garage Logic Podcast and subscribe for your daily content, including behind-the-scenes content, full segments and video shorts. That's Garage Logic Podcast on YouTube. Monday, Cha.